music from Maren Gaffron. It's called The Housewives Song. And it's 13 minutes now after the hour on this Monday morning here along the Broken Road. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is in Garden Valley, Texas, out there just east of Dallas. And he raises grapes. He's a biochemist. He's a member of the board of Creation Moments. And he brings us news of human cloning. Don, good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Jim, and good morning, Dave. How are you, folks? Done.
Good. Real good.
We love talking to Don because he can bring us a scientific way of thinking. I want to say viewpoint, but it's not always a scientific viewpoint. I'm not sure that science has a viewpoint because that would imply that all science is like one thing out there. Science, Don, am I right in saying science is really a method of looking at things, isn't it? A method of analyzing data. There's no monolithic science out there. Am I right?
Well, no, that's correct, especially when you're talking about origins, for example, or mm-hmm. historical science. I mean, it becomes more of one's own view as opposed to actual observations and then trying to describe those observations. Although there are certainly many scientists out there that would argue that point, but for the most part, I mean, true science is you observe something and then you try to describe it either through mathematical formulas or through some, you know, logical process, which we would call the scientific method, for example, to come up with a conclusion and then test your conclusion, test your hypothesis to see whether or not it fits the data that you're observing.
So if there was some kind of a technical or scientific horizon there, something, you know, the edge of knowledge in a certain area, and all of a sudden there were discoveries in that area, some scientists would jump on it, and other scientists might have reservations about it for one reason or another. They might have scruples, shall we say, about going there, because there's a divergence of opinion. And that's kind of where science and philosophy meet, isn't it, that edge?
Well, there is and that's what one of the things we're going to be talking about today. There is an ethical point at which you have to ask the question, is this worth going down this road? Because it has ramifications, in this case for human life, what does that mean for all of us?
Mm-hmm. We're talking about an article that's available to everybody over at answersingenesis.org this morning. It has to do with human cloning. And the article reports that apparently human beings have been cloned. There's a group at the Oregon Health and Science University that says it's achieved the elusive goal, it says here, producing human embryos through cloning. But apparently the idea here is not to grow a human being, or maybe it's just because that technically we're not able to do that yet, but rather to use these embryos to harvest stem cells. And there's all kinds of ethical considerations here. Don, have they succeeded in cloning human beings? Is that what we're really talking about here?
Well, yeah, cloning. I mean, it's... what they have succeeded in doing is producing an embryo, and the way they did it, and the way most of this cloning is done, is you take an oocyte, which is an egg, you take out its DNA, and then you insert the DNA of the person that you're trying to clone. In this case, they took skin cells, or fibroblasts, which are the cells that are in between your cells that make connective tissue, and they took the DNA out of the fibroblast and then inserted it into the oocyte or the egg that had its DNA removed, and then grew it up in a presumably tissue culture, which then produced an embryo. They don't say how long they grew the cells up, but had to be a week or two, in which case a little human being was being formed in this in this embryo, basically. One of the things that they did say was that the embryo did not have the ability to implant into a human being, for example, into a mother, because the outside, apparently the outside of the embryo didn't have the necessary equipment to implant into a womb. But other than that, I mean, it appears to be, if they're collecting stem cells from these embryos, then it had to be pretty much human.
So the long-range purpose, and the technology may have other ideas about where it's going, but the purpose of this particular work was to be able to create a source for stem cells, not to grow a human being. Okay. So this is
yeah.
Would you say this is just an intermediate step toward growing a whole human being?
Well, if you get this far, what's to stop you from going further, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Can you nurture that embryo outside of a human mother and bring it to full term? Is that technically possible?
I don't think it has been done. Normally, I mean, we all have heard of in vitro, fertilization, mm-hmm. where obviously you've got the egg, from a mom and the sperm from the dad, and that's fertilized in a, in a petri dish, for example. Mm-hmm. And you go back and implant that into the viable eggs, at least into, the mother.
Mm-hmm.
All the nutrition obviously is coming from the mom, and to try to do that in totally in vitro, I think would be very, very difficult, because you've got the umbilical cord and you've got the exchange of oxygen, mm-hmm. Across the placenta, and it's extremely complex. So
in vitro really refers to that petri dish or the test tube or whatever the apparatus is outside the mom.
You're right. Right. Okay. Some type of cell culture environment. Now, mm-hmm. we've gotten pretty sophisticated with our cell culture techniques, and at least when I was in doing biotechnology, cell culture was advancing, by leaps and bounds, because we were trying to make all kinds of stuff using biological material, for example, in biological cells, and so. Everything from growing cells on fibers, on hollow tubes, where you could pass the nutrients through the tubes, for example, and the cells could be nourished that way, simulating real blood cells in a sense. Instead of having blood going through the tubes, mm-hmm. you've got nutrients and oxygen and stuff going through the tubes. So, in theory, it could be done. But it would probably look more like something from a science fiction, movie than what you would normally think of, okay, well, this is happening inside the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, I mean, one of the things you have to consider if we as humans would go this far is, what is that, human being going to be like? Because even when, the baby is in the womb, there's a lot of interaction between the mother and the outside environment, for example. I mean, once the nervous system is put into place, which gets put into place fairly soon after the fertilization, for example, it's mm-hmm. like weeks, it's like 6 weeks the nervous system is being laid down.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, the little embryo can begin to feel and hear, things in its environment, and begins to hear its mother's voice and possibly its father's voice, mm-hmm. and the dog and, all the other stuff. So it's getting this environmental stimulation, and there would be none of that or very little of that inside some type of apparatus that would keep this this embryo and eventually a fetus, you know, alive.
Now we've kind of covered some aspects of this before, and we've asked, you know, at what point does spirit become involved? And maybe that's what really makes a human being, not just the DNA, the technical stuff, the proteins and the amino acids and all those other things. And I think the basic issue here is, and the article notes, the clones are created without parents and without fertilization, and these particular clones are not able to successfully implant in a uterus, but do those factors negate the humanness of the embryos? Is spirit involved? I mean, do we have a roadmap to go by from the Bible in this matter?
Well, yeah.
I think this is tough.
Yeah, it is. It is an interesting question. You know, in Jeremiah, it's God tells Jeremiah that before you were in your mother's womb, I knew you. Mm-hmm. So obviously, there is something. You know, call it our spirit, call it our soul, spirit, soul, you know, whatever, that God already knows. Of course, he knows the beginning from the end. And so time is not an issue for him. But there's clearly something, you know, something available in the spirit realm that is not there, you know, in the physical realm. It doesn't become, we don't become physical until obviously we get at the point of conception. Mm-hmm. Now, I like to think of our bodies, for example, our physical bodies as like a very, very sophisticated, you know, machine that we can't duplicate. And this whole process of cloning, by the way, some people may think of it as, wow, you know, that's a major scientific advance. Well, when you think about it, the information, excuse me, within a cell, which resides in the DNA, of course, it is already present. It's there. Mm-hmm. So there is no, you know, recreation or no making of new information.
This seems to be a mechanical thing, not a creation thing to me.
Well, it is. The process is mechanical. Mm-hmm. From that point that you're taking, you know, you're taking out one DNA, for example, from the egg, which in this case is. You know, a haploid type of DNA. In other words, it's only one DNA strand. It's not two DNA strands inside an egg. The at the point of fertilization, when the sperm enters inside the cell, then then you get a diploid or the two DNA strands joining up, and which then, you know, starts forming a human being. In this case, they took out the one strand of DNA, and they're putting in mechanically two strands of DNA.
But let me insert a question here. But that same process happens in animals. Now, what differentiates the human process from the animal process if it's not spirit? I mean, the nature, the DNA itself is different, but the process is the same. And it seems to me these scientists are simply have learned the process. You know, we can take minerals from the ground, make steel, and then build a car. But all that's been given to us. All we've done is discover how to put it together. And I'm thinking...
Well, that's right. Mm-hmm. And it is right. And, of course, we're aware of Dolly the sheep that mm-hmm. was cloned. You know, that was the kind of the first cloning that took place. And they grew up a whole sheep. So if they could grow up a whole sheep, one would think that, okay, you can grow up a whole human as well.
So does the thing that makes this this clone a human, the kind of DNA that's used, is that what establishes its humanness?
Well, yes, the DNA certainly is, you know, the instruction set for the cell, mm-hmm. or it's like the software.
Well, it's like or, the architect's plan.
Yes, absolutely.
Self-executing plan. Yeah.
So you know, it's telling the cell, you know, how to make things and what to make. Now, there are other things in the egg that, you know, start the process, like enzymes and other, a lot of other, you know, building materials that are absolutely necessary for the whole process. The real question, do you have a human or is this non-human? You know, there are things that happen at the point of conception that is not happening here, for example. Illustrate one thing. I mean, when there, you know, in the natural process of conception, mm-hmm. when you have an egg traveling down the fallopian tubes and the sperm is swimming up, you know, to meet the egg, only one sperm actually gets through into an egg. As soon as a sperm penetrates the cell of the egg, that cell surface then changes so that no other sperms can enter, which is a good thing because you don't want an overabundance of, you know, more than one copy of you know, male DNA in the cell. So that must also change the surface of the cell to begin the process of implantation, as I was talking about earlier, inside, you know, inside the womb. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what's happening, you know, I don't know if they know what's happening to the cell surface, but if it can't implant into the womb, one would think that whole natural process has been disrupted of, you know, on the cell surface of this egg, for example. Mm-hmm. So if that process isn't happening, then maybe they're considering, well, okay, this isn't human anymore. Mm-hmm. But you do have the DNA there. You do have all of the mechanism necessary for producing a human. Mm-hmm. And just because you're doing something artificially or, you know, outside the natural process doesn't necessarily mean that it's not a fully human. One of the interesting things about Dolly, for example, was that, okay, they grew up this sheep, for example, and the sheep, you know, grew up, but they found out that it died early. Mm-hmm. Because they used mature DNA.
So the sheep, you know, was born old, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it had some time on it already, even though it was just born. Mm. So a human, you know, if you take old DNA, that is, if you took your DNA or my DNA, and we cloned a Don or we cloned a Jim, mm-hmm. then presumably we're going to have the same problem. And part of the issue, which is, I mean, it gets into, you know, some molecular biology here, but part of the issue is our DNA has a lifespan to it. And that means that it can only be copied so many times. God, when God created us, and after we sinned and we no longer had access to the tree of life outside the Garden of Eden, then we have this start code, for example, for duplication or replication of DNA on our DNA. And there's only so many numbers of codes of this start code on our DNA. And so when you, every time you replicate the DNA, you lose one of the start codes because you don't copy the one that you know, your enzyme is sitting on, DNA replicates, for example, or that you're sitting on in order to, you know, start the process, start copying the DNA. Mm-hmm. So each time you replicate the DNA, you're losing a start code. So you take an old DNA, then it's got, you know, its start codes are shorter than if you took, you know, if you went through the natural process.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, that's why the individual or the Dolly, for example, came out old or appeared old. I mean, it appeared like a normal sheep, but it didn't, you know, he didn't or she didn't last very long.
The lifespan was short, yeah.
The lifespan was short. So you start cloning humans, and their lifespan's going to be short unless you can figure out how to add more of these start codes to it.
David, did you happen to look up Oregon Health and Science University? Do you know what that is, what that institution
is?
Yeah,
it is. It's just the public medical college in Oregon.
Okay.
And, you know, it's been around for a while. One of the, you know, maybe, and I don't know that the co-founder of Nike was directly involved in cloning or not, but he gave $100 million to the Oregon State University you know, campus a number of years ago. And one of the buildings, or I mean the new structure, the new building, the new campus is on an elevated structure. It's on a not a mountain, but a little bit shorter than that. And the locals call it Phil Hill.
Hmm.
Because Phil Knight gave all the money, and so that's and nothing official, but this is where the you know, all the research goes. So it is public money.
Okay.
Very definitely taxpayer money, and I would, you know, it's not just Oregon, because...
Well, I'm sure this kind of research is going on around the world, because Dolly, who came from England, as I recall, work was being done there, and the Japanese are doing advanced work in this field as well. And it's all disturbing.
I've heard of all kinds of animals being cloned. I mean, it's just science fiction that I've read about. I've seen pictures of ears grown on the backs of mice, and you know, and mice being cloned, and all their smaller animals. And I've even heard that somebody was trying to clone at one time a giraffe. You know, I'm not. I guess, Don, do you know why?
Do you? It's because it can be done.
Because we can.
I think that's my amoral question about science. I mean, it doesn't seem to make any difference. What moral position you take, somebody out there, if it can be done technically, is going to do it.
That's right. And unless you have some ethics behind you. Now, for a number of years after Dolly was cloned, human cloning was banned in this country, as you recall. And so... I don't know when the ban, you know, was lifted by Congress, but at some point, obviously, it has been. And you open up a whole, you know, a whole area of, it reminds me of kind of like Nazi Germany when Hitler was doing all of these experiments on humans as well as, you know, on vegetables and all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Trying to, you know, make this Aryan super race. And you could imagine getting into some type of, you know, situation like that, where you're trying to, you know, improve on the human race and make a super race. Now, one of the things they talked about in this article is, okay, you make a cloned human, and we're not going that far yet, but we're taking the cells, in this case stem cells. And why do you want to take the stem cells? Well, because stem cells have the ability to differentiate into all kinds of different cells. You can make liver cells, you can make, you know, heart cells, you can make muscle cells from stem cells, and that's the big push behind stem cell research. It just so happens that, okay, we're doing it this way because, well, we've been, you know, the scientific community's hands have been tied because it is, you know, it's not no longer ethical to take stem cells out of aborted fetuses, for example. Because then it has the appearance, which it is, mm-hmm. that you're using an aborted fetus for not only scientific but medical purposes. But here, let's suppose that you've actually grown up this human, this fully human now. Is this a sub-race of humans, and so we can treat them as slaves? Or if we can then improve on their DNA and actually make them, you know, stronger or more intelligent, if we can figure out how to do that, then we could have a super race, and that super race then could, you know, take over the world. In either case, it is, you know, it is highly, highly not only distasteful, but in either case, it's you know, it's just morally wrong and ethically wrong to do either of those.
Well, I guess the core question here is, I know how you feel, I know how I feel, and I imagine David would agree, but I think most of the world is without ethical guidelines here. You know, this feeding frenzy that is the pursuit of something magnificent in the field of science seems to have nothing to do with morals or with scruples or with ethics. The question ultimately comes in, but only from other people who may or may not have the power to put the brakes on it. You know, if you made the statement a minute ago that it has now become unethical. Well, I would say it's always been unethical. But now some legislature someplace has responded by passing a law grounded on that ethic. And right. So it's a legal barrier, not an ethical barrier, in the minds of these scientists. It becomes kind of a negative thing, yeah.
Yeah, and at the same time, I mean, there are very, you know, individuals will say, you know, they will read in a magazine article and they'll hear that somebody can clone a perfect human being or human being that doesn't have diseases or clone something that will take their child who is in the womb with Down syndrome and clone something that would correct that. And those are right now are just theoretical. But, you know, individual states have looked at that. Reproductive cloning is banned in Arizona, Maryland, and Missouri. The United States House of Representatives has looked at banning cloning four times over the last 15, 20 years. And each time, you know, it's passed in the House, but the Senate has not agreed. And so there is no law in the United States at this time. There are particular principles. I mean, you know, that we won't use federal money for certain kinds of activities. In this particular case, you know, human cloning. 13 states banned reproductive cloning, and I guess I misspoke. Those three states I mentioned earlier, they not only banned reproductive cloning, but they banned prohibit the use of public money for activities like this. And Oregon is not one of them. I think you're onto something a little bit there, Jim, because when it comes down to the guy who was laying on his deathbed and needs a liver badly. And he's too old, too drunk, he's destroyed his own liver, you know, for whatever reason. He's not going to say to his legislator, make sure it's passed and make sure I can get a new liver. Mm-hmm. He's going to go out and buy one. Mm-hmm.
If he's got enough money, he can, you know, he can just say, well, you know, I'll just clone me a liver and then we'll, you know, just replace it. And, you know, in some sense, well, gee, that makes, you know, perfect mechanical sense to be able to do that. And here, I guess the root of the whole issue is, what do you think about life? If you think life, you know, just started as a mass of chemicals in a sea, you know, in the soup, primordial soup type of thing, which, you know, all kids are being taught that in school these days, even though that's been debunked for years, it's still in the textbooks. If you think that we are just, you know, a mass of chemicals that have come together and, you know, oh my goodness, you know, we've got now human beings and we're no different than animals and there's nothing special about us, And life isn't really special. It's, you know, whatever we do is just mechanical. Then, okay, yeah, the cloning, there shouldn't be anything wrong with it. But if you have the opinion or the worldview that, you know what, you know, God created all of this, and he created it for a purpose, and that's to glorify him. And when we start messing around with God's creation, then, you know, those of us who are Christians and have a worldview that, you know, God created everything, and everything is precious in his sight, we step back and we say, whoa, you know, hold on here. This isn't right. And I think that's the moral difference, or the, you know, in one case, you're amoral. You don't have any morals, so you don't have any ethics, and it's just, well, if I can do it, I'm going to do it. In the other case, you're saying, well, you know, should we really be doing this?
Yeah, but the trouble comes in expressing this reservation that we have as Christians, because it's not very concrete. Maybe, you know, if God made us in his image, maybe it's that image that makes us human, and not the mechanics of putting together a body with blood vessels and some sort of a hard drive to make it go, and being able to consume energy and even to reproduce, unless somehow we can discover how to convey that image of God. What we've made is not human. I mean, does that add anything to the discussion here? I mean, where does God's image? I mean, if we're human, we're only human if we're made in his image, then certainly there's something about that image, whatever that means, that differentiates us from the rest of creation.
Well, not only did, yes, that's, you're absolutely correct. And what is that? Well, you know, creativity, the ability to communicate. Well, not only communicate with one another.
So we put a test together for this clone. Now he's grown up. He's 20, and we give him a paintbrush and say, paint something, or write something, or make a movie, or do something creative. And on the basis of that, we'll decide whether or not you're human. Now I'm saying this kind of tongue in cheek. But you see what I'm getting at here. How do we create a test for an entity having or containing the image of God? We don't know enough about the image of God to define it. I don't think you've gone a long way to doing it, but somehow I think it's more than that.
Well, and yeah, we've talked about in the past, you know, what is this, you know, what is a spirit, you know, what is the soul, and how does that interact with this physical body of ours, and somehow, you know, all of that, you know, makes us, you know, if one of the aspects of being made in the image of God, you know, is that, well, you know, God is Father, Son, and Spirit. There's three persons, you know, in God, and we have a spirit, soul, and body, you know, as well. Mm-hmm. And so that's there. One aspect of being made in the image of God. And when, you know, we've talked about this too, when, for example, you know, when Jesus was on the cross, he had the ability to give up his spirit. And when he said, into thy hands I commend my spirit, then, you know, his body was dead, essentially, at that point. When Ananias and Sapphira, you know, came in, and, you know, Peter asked, is this how much you've sold mm-hmm. your field for? Yeah. Then, you know, their spirits were taken from them, and they died. Their bodies were perfect. I mean, there was nothing wrong. I mean, one moment they're living, and the next moment they're dead. So mm-hmm. there is something about the spirit's interaction with the body that keeps us alive, which begs the question, do these, you know, do these clones have a spirit? Hmm. And you know, at what point does the spirit enter an embryo? Is it at the point of conception? Or is it sometime later, which is, you know, asking these questions, you know, just gets you, I mean, in some instances, if you don't say at the point of conception, like we have, you know, like we've done, if you say, well, you know, 3 months out, or maybe it's 6 weeks, you know, when the nervous system is there, that's when the spirit enters. Mm-hmm. Because obviously the spirit's got to interact with the nervous system in order, you know, for the spirit to have something to interact with. We don't know. And only obviously God knows the answer. So the safest conclusion is to say at the point of conception, when the new DNA is inserted into this egg and that egg starts to divide, that's when we have created another human being. And I wouldn't say that we have created, but that's when, you know, the clock starts on another human being. So if you value life, then to create an embryo, which is the point of the article, to create an embryo and then kill it at some point in time to collect cells from it. Now, you know, the stem cells, you know, are pretty far along in the development of a human being. And so to collect these stem cells, it's just like you're collecting stem cells from an aborted fetus. Or in some cases, from a fetus from a baby that's born alive. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's...
in essence, raising humans to be consumed, in a manner of speaking.
Right. Yeah. It's not like you're creating, you know, parts of your own self. Mm-hmm. And by the way, this whole stem cell research has been, you know, has been proven that developing adult stem cell research, I mean, adult stem cells, works a lot better than doing it from embryos or doing it from, you know, fetuses, for example.
And of course, there you have voluntary compliance from another human being. So, yes, take this and do something creative with it. You know,
take your own cells, and let's just multiply them in the petri dish until we get, you know, we get some stem cells. We collect the stem cells and then we differentiate them into the cells that you need, for example, whether it's a liver, as we were talking about before.
Do you have any ethical reservations about that process?
I guess I really don't, because you're kind of multiplying. You're doing cell culture on your own cells.
So the difference between the two then is one is voluntary compliance and the other is involuntary. So if we assume that we've got humanness on both sides of the argument, it's that voluntary part, that willingness, that is really the key, the difference between moral and immoral.
Well, and you're not trying to form a whole new human being. Mm-hmm. In this case, they're forming a whole new human being. I mean, you're creating a embryo which has the potential to form. It has all the information to form a whole new human being.
So if I, as a human
egg, is directing that whole process to happen.
Okay, well, let's say that now science has the capability of cloning a whole human being, and they could take an adult who comes to them and says, clone me, and do it. Is that the same moral issue as what we're talking about here? Because now
absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're trying to, you know... You're saying that, okay, I want to live forever. So
the difference is a human being giving permission for this, as opposed to a scientist making an outside third-party decision to take it. Right. I'm just trying to isolate the moral nut here, because I think at some point, Christians in particular are going to have to come up with a much better definition of life and the image of God and what's moral and what's immoral, so that science will take it seriously. And I'm not sure that'll ever happen.
Well, I'm not
the goalposts
either.
Yeah, yeah, people keep moving the goalposts. I mean, it's, you know, the definitions keeps moving around. Mm-hmm. You know, during the whole discussion and even before we started, I remembered the film, the 2005 film, The Island, and it's about a bunch of people who were on an island, and every couple of weeks or so they'd have a lottery, and if your number came off, you get to leave the island. Well, actually, what happened was all of the people in this movie were cloned creatures or cloned copies of people who lived on the mainland. And the people, the individuals, they had a heart attack. They lost a limb. They had, you know, a liver disease. They, you know, they needed a new kidney. And so they would vote off their double or their clone to for spare parts.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the reason. I mean, it's, you know, interesting movie, a little distasteful, but and you know, and at the end of it, the two of the clones, and they're self aware. They understand. They have creative thought and all the rest of it. They escape from the island and try to lead normal lives as clones of two other people.
And it just may be that fiction leads our thinking in this. It's been dealt with over and over in many different iterations. You know, there were clone characters in several, well, Star Trek maybe,
and Star Wars,
Battlestar Galactica. Sure. They all dealt with this issue at one time or another, and often had episodes intimating that clones had feelings too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and others the opposite way. Of course, they were just as divided in the fictional accounts. They were divided over the same issue. So, fascinating topic. The article itself, again, is at answersingenesis.org. And when we post to this morning's conversation on our website, we'll include a link to that article. But you could search for human cloning at the Answers in Genesis. It's all one word, answersingenesis.org. And I'm sure come up with the same article. But we'll include the link in our post a little bit later on today. Been talking with Dr. Don Clark, biochemist and member of the board at creationmoments.com, celebrating 50 years. Isn't that right, Don? 50 years now. That's impressive.
Yes. it's been, 50 years that Creation Moments has been in existence. Started with Dr. Lang, and he, it was actually Bible Science, and they had a newsletter called Bible Science Newsletter. And several years ago, we changed the name to Creation Moments because of our radio program that we have. It's all of 50 years, so it's been a long time.
And they offer the public quite a website, too. It's an experience. You might want to head over there sometime in the near future to creationmoments.com. If you want a convenient link, you'll find it on our Broken Road Radio website as well. Don Clark, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. I'm not sure we solved this. we'll tackle it again.
Well, I think we solved it in our minds, but I don't know if we convinced anybody necessarily. But I think it boils down to a moral issue and whether or not you have, what your worldview is, really, is what it boils down to.
That's fascinating, and it's really front and center in front of us right now because it looks like it's going to happen, like it or not. We're going to have to deal with the issue. And as Christians, that gives us, I think, a special responsibility. Don, blessings. Thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, very good.